Welcome back to the Theia Podcast, where we talk with the brightest minds in the world of technology, finance, economics, and startups. Today, it is my pleasure to sit down with Mason Carter. He is the principal at Early Riders and co-founder of Acropolis. Mason, welcome to the show.
What's going on, Joe? Happy to be here.
Likewise, I'm happy to have you on. Great day for it, too. It's Bitcoin White Paper Day, on this day in 2008. Very, very cool moment. It's also Halloween. It's also Diwali, so a lot of different things overlapping. But either way, pleasure to have you on the show. Let's get straight into perhaps the biggest news, and I'd like to hear your take on this from a Bitcoin corporate treasury perspective. MicroStrategy's historic plan announced yesterday during its Q3 2024 earnings, this 2121 plan, it announced a $42 billion capital raise, just eye-watering numbers. It's almost the size of MicroStrategy's entire current market cap. It's $21 billion in fixed income and $21 billion in equity. Over the next 3 years, and this particular equity offering is the largest at-the-money equity offering in the history of capital markets. So this is obviously massive development. In light of this crazy strategy, do you see this as a tipping point for Bitcoin adoption in corporate finance? And how are your companies and how are you positioned to support other companies that are looking to follow suit?
Yeah, I like to be careful in making predictions, of course, because there's been several times that Bitcoiners have gotten a bit over their skis and said that this is the super cycle. This is the time where we're seeing global adoption. So I don't want to make any bold claims, but it does feel like the tides are shifting because MicroStrategy has had the chance to go through a full cycle. They've proven that they weren't liquidated. They're continuing to execute the strategy. And I like the 42 number. I'm a big numbers guy, so obviously 21 to 21, 42 is the answer to everything. So I love that part of it. And I love that they're saying, hey, look, we've laid out this strategy, we've executed it, and now we're going to continue. And we're going to do it at a bigger scale. And we're publicly stating our playbook. So it makes it more appetizing for corporates to follow that. And I think also I would say aura of Saylor is beginning to change a bit and people are giving him more respect because I would say 2-3 years ago, he was the crazy guy who started this company and has wild ideas and maybe this Bitcoin thing will work out. Well, maybe it won't. And now he's sitting on, I believe, over $8 billion in profit. So it's working out very well. And we're just getting started, as you know, folks listening to this probably know. And then in terms of how we're able to help, so you mentioned I am a principal at Early Riders and we're involved with OnRamp and then also I'm the co-founder of Acropolis. So helping smaller companies, SMBs for now, apply this Saylor strategy. So whether you're, it could be any sort of business, we're at Acropolis here to help you start to accumulate Bitcoin for your treasury, keep it safe. We do advisory. We're building out a suite of ancillary services and all sorts of things. So happy to talk about that. But last thing I'll say, just sort of back to the on-ramp side of it, is I believe that in order for Bitcoin to scale into the 100 trillion plus, you know, asset that we hope it will be, we're going to need more than hardware devices for every man, woman, child, entity, foundation, company on Earth. So that's where OnRamp comes in. And it's multi-sig, multi-institution custody. So you have these institutions in BitGo and others that their only job is to manage your multi-sig, a piece of your multi-sig, and they don't have unilateral control. And I believe this will be a great unlock for the industry and keeping Bitcoin safe, because even if you make all the right decisions, you grok Bitcoin early, you don't get wrecked by shit coins. Oh, sorry, I'm not sure if we're allowed to curse.
Oh, absolutely.
and you lose it, you lose it. It doesn't matter what you did. So very passionate on these topics.
Fantastic. So circling back to the small, medium-sized business that may want to own Bitcoin, why is it in their favor to own an asset like Bitcoin? Obviously, for small and medium-sized business owners, they may have seen it in the news. They obviously have a corporate treasury that contains X number of assets in it. for them now, why is Bitcoin an asset that they want to hold? What are the conversations that you usually have, you know, with businesses that are interested in allocating to Bitcoin in their treasury?
Well, first of all, I would say a lot of SMBs don't have treasuries at all. A lot don't understand FDIC insurance, and they have, you know, millions of dollars sitting in a single bank account, which is in and of itself a problem because FDIC only covers up to 250. So there's that, and we're helping them start to create treasuries in general. But every business these days is seeing their margins compress. They're seeing their costs increase. So your cost of labor, your cost of goods, your cost of everything is going up. And people are becoming more hip to the fact that this money that we all use, the dollar and fiat currencies in general, they're not limited. They're printed and we have no control over it. And I think people are looking for, and by people, I mean business owners, they're looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. And obviously, Bitcoin being the ultimately scarce digital bear asset, you know, that you can store in a very easy way now as a solution. You know, you take, it depends on the business capital needs, but maybe a percentage of your free cash flows, a percentage of your cash reserves, you know, money that you're making on interest and putting that into Bitcoin. There's all sorts of different strategies, but if you're a business owner and you can commit to holding this asset over an epoch, over a 4-year period, then we have the data to show that your business is going to be much better off. And not to beat the, you know, the MicroStrategy horse dead, but MicroStrategy was a company that was worth $600 million a few years ago, right? And now it's worth, like, what is the market cap? 45
billion.
Yeah. 50 billion. I mean, it's obviously they have access to capital markets. They have expertise. They have all this hype around their publicly traded stock now. But the great thing about Bitcoin is you get to use that same network that they get to use. It's just on any scale that you'd like. And also, if you're Apple, you can use it at a larger scale. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bitcoin strategy isn't just limited to these public companies. It's also available for anybody. I think that's a great point. Some businesses may look at the price of Bitcoin, they may get unit bias and say, well, you know, it's too expensive or it's too volatile or this or that or the other thing. But what you mentioned, having data that shows what Bitcoin can do for businesses is really the key, I think, for orange pilling, particularly these small and medium-sized businesses. So talk to me about the multi-institution custody approach. You touched on it a moment ago with OnRamp. You know, no single entity having unilateral control over your Bitcoin. Talk to me about the benefit over that, and then talk to me about why that is beneficial for small and medium-sized businesses over something like a traditional multi-sig setup.
Yeah, it's great because what I alluded to earlier on the hardware devices, I think, and I don't want this to be misconstrued, I think people should always self-custody Bitcoin. I'm not saying 100% of every Bitcoin on Earth needs to be in this form of custody. But when you're thinking about holding the asset for decades, and you're thinking about companies that don't necessarily have people that can hold on to these devices, you're going to need a new solution. And I believe OnRamp with their, you know, with the multi-institution, it eliminates those single points of failure. So you're still doing, you know, best practices in Bitcoin. And the trope of not your keys, not your coins has been great for several years because it's led directly to the point that you want people to know. And it's that you don't want to leave your Bitcoin with a centralized custodian because you could potentially lose it. You could get Mt. Gox, you could get FTX. But nowadays, I think it's more not your control, not your coins, or something along those lines. I haven't thought of it yet. And I've personally gone through the journey of you get some Bitcoin, you leave it on an exchange, and then you realize that's not the best idea. You withdraw it onto a paper wallet, and then maybe you go, okay, well, this is a paper wallet, so you get a hardware wallet. And then you discover multi-sig, or at least this is what happened for me. You discover multi-sig, you then start thinking about, well, what if I got hit by a bus? What if all three were compromised and you think, okay, maybe I'll do some sort of collaborative custody model, which Theia is great, Unchained is great, but then you're still in the end leaving a treasure map, or it's not exactly clear how those are passed on in terms of inheritance. And you know, there's all kinds of considerations that just really aren't covered with those solutions. And I think for the Bitcoin that you want to give to your grandkids and your great grandkids, it makes sense to leave it in a multi-institution account. And then moving on to businesses, yeah, it's I think it's a non-starter for businesses to hold Bitcoin. And let me talk about the experience I had at eBay, because I spent the last year or so before jumping into Bitcoin full-time at eBay on the treasury team. And I like to say that their portfolio is, you know, this massive billion-dollar treasury portfolio. And I think it's 500 different ways to earn 5%. And I think, I don't want to be too strong, but I think in the future, all companies will hold Bitcoin on their treasury, including eBay. And let's say they wanted to do that. If you start to think about the different methods for getting exposure to the asset, you think about leaving it on an exchange, obviously not a great idea for a corporation. You might think ETFs for a corporation, but in the end, 90% of the ETFs are still custodied by the same exchange. And you just thinking about, like, from a risk perspective, the CEO and CFO of a large publicly traded company can't have a couple hardware devices. Like, it's just kind of it's a non-starter. So I think multi-institution is the way that businesses and around the world adopt Bitcoin on a larger scale, and we get to that 100 trust plus trillion dollar asset, like I mentioned.
So great. So talk to me a little bit more about the risks associated with each of these setups and what makes multi-institutional custody superior to something like a traditional multi-sig, and then this one's obviously a layup, a single key hardware device. What are the risk factors associated with each, and why does multi-institutional pose the fewest?
Yeah, I think, and we have this laid out in our Acropolis Bitcoin Treasury playbook, but you have to think about, from a corporation's perspective, who has access to the hardware wallets? What brand of hardware wallet is reliable? These things change every year. They're like iPhones, is the new Ledger and then the new Nano and the new X and the S. And it's just, there's this environment of devices is constantly changing. They need to be updated. They need to be safeguarded. You need to know, where are these hardware devices stored? Are they in physical vaults? Like, there's a lot of questions here that I think just don't work for companies. How is business continuity ensured amongst a changing team? You know, someone takes another job, someone decides to move to another department. How do we do this? And multi-institution is more of a traditional, like, login that you would be used to, but except for your Chase login, obviously that's centralized, but this is just logging into your multi-sig. And if you have the ability to delegate different parties and different signatories, I think that makes a lot more sense. And then obviously we know that single sig is not a great idea in any circumstance, whether you're retail or anybody, because, you know, you lose that one seed phrase and your Bitcoin is gone for good. There's nobody you can call. So big fan of multi-sig technology, and the fact that it's native to Bitcoin makes it just that much better, because you're not running some outside software to interact with the Bitcoin network. This is native to the protocol.
Fantastic. So let's talk about the trusted Bitcoin advisory component of Acropolis. On your website, you write, it's the industry's first outsourced Bitcoin strategy officer. I've heard your research advisor at Acropolis, Sam Callahan, talk about previously, I think he's quoted as saying that the Bitcoin strategy officer is going to be one of the biggest roles that comes into companies in corporate finance over the next several decades. Talk about your unique position as an outsourced Bitcoin strategy officer, and then what that entails. How does that role guide clients through you know, Bitcoin, everything from, you know, Bitcoin's volatility, market dynamics, to understanding the asset and custodying it, and then being that agent that employs Bitcoin strategy on their behalf as a third party.
Acropolis, we agree. We believe that every company will indeed need a Bitcoin strategy officer because Bitcoin is complicated. Bitcoin has a lot of history. It has a lot of technology behind it. It has a lot of different subjects that you need to get hip on before you really, really understand the value of the network. And you see folks like Dylan LeClaire advising Metaplanet and going and helping them with their strategy. But I think there's not enough Dylan LeClaires on the planet to go around and help every company. So at Acropolis, you know, we basically handhold businesses in the education piece of it, and then advise based on, you know, the industry that they're in, the age of the business, the location of the business. There's a lot of factors to determine what sort of accumulation strategy they want to go into. How do they want to purchase the Bitcoin over time? I highly recommend people head to our website and see everything that we offer specifically. But yeah.
Fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about why focusing solely on Bitcoin is so important for Acropolis. Obviously, this is a no-brainer for people who are in the know, but on this podcast, we try to reach a much wider audience who may still be dabbling in all the other stuff, all the other shitcoins, all the other crypto garbage. So why is focusing solely on Bitcoin important for Acropolis, and how does that exclusivity enhance the treasury solution that you provide?
Bitcoin is the king. It will always be the king. And a lot of folks that are new to the space think, oh, they have the unit bias. They think the number is too high and that surely technology will get better and we'll have a replacement for Bitcoin. But Bitcoiners know this isn't happening for several reasons. But Bitcoin, the innovation and the digital scarcity, the proof of work, everything is put together. And Bitcoin wasn't invented. I like to say, or not just me, but Bitcoin was discovered. It's the combination of a lot of different technologies being put together to create this, you know, somewhat perfect system of ultimate digital scarcity. And by focusing on Bitcoin as a company, we're not distracted by, you know, all these other different tokens and technologies. And like, really, they're just companies to me. I think Ethereum is a company. It's seeking to be a world computer. They've got a team that executes it. They have a roadmap. Things change. I just, Bitcoin is great because it's set in stone. It is, set in stone. Obviously, you can, there can be changes to the protocol if the entire network deems it's necessary, but it's very slow and steady for a reason. And by focusing on Bitcoin, you get to avoid a lot of scams. You get to be in this network that is actually solving an issue, which is money printing. And all the other cryptos are really just distractions.
Yeah. Extremely well said. So this is something I've been saying for a very long time. It's a consensus, obviously, in the Bitcoin world, but it's increasingly the consensus in TradFi as well. If you look at the inflows to the Ethereum spot ETFs, they're basically non-existent. And if you compare, actually, one of the interesting data points that shows institutional interest in all this other garbage is waning is if you compare the Ethereum ETF assets under management compared to the Bitcoin ETF assets under management, it's actually underperforming the ETH BTC trading pair. And so fewer institutions are interested in retail than fewer institutions are interested in Ethereum than retail investors are interested in Ethereum relative to Bitcoin. And Ethereum being the mother of all shitcoins, that indicates to me that as new players come onto the scene, they aren't even considering all this other stuff. They're considering Bitcoin. Kind of just a fascinating data point, but I'd love to hear your take on the maturation of Bitcoin as an asset. And if you also see the very same thing, that there's this delineation for new entrants into the market, that they recognize Bitcoin as an asset in its own right and not bundled in with this other crypto stuff. I'm curious if you tend to agree with that and if you've also seen something similar.
Yeah, I think the slide that Saylor put out at his Bitcoin for Corporations conference earlier this year in 2024, he showed the he had this timeline of Bitcoin, and that starting in 2024 is really the adulthood where it's, you know, it's Bitcoin is turning 18 and it's becoming this institutional asset with, you know, there's, we're working on at Early Riders, building out the infrastructure, and all kinds of other companies are, you know, building out wallets and building out insurance products and building out this and that. And there's so many things. I think we're going to get to a point very soon, which I believe is 100K is sort of the turning point where at 100K, you start to wonder how high does Bitcoin go instead of when is Bitcoin going to zero? I think that turning point is really going to be pivotal for us. And then remind me the second part of your question.
The second part is, you know, in these companies that you've spoken to, have you also noticed a shift in people recognizing Bitcoin as something separate from crypto? Or is there still a lot of work to be done in separating the two assets from each other?
I think it's gotten better, but I still would say that in a lot of our conversations, people still get it confused. They still don't understand why we're not recommending a, you know, diversified portfolio of tokens, because that's been what they've been told for their entire life, is you need to diversify. And like I said, at eBay, the portfolio is 500 different ways to earn 5%. And this applies for every company. But it's more about diversifying your risk rather than diversifying the asset. Because once you found Bitcoin, you know that it's going to outperform everything. It's going to outperform any token of scale. Like, yes, there will be one-off tokens that outperform, and people love to show that. But it will outperform anything of scale.
Yeah, yeah, extremely well said. And so what do you think needs to happen, you know, to accelerate that shift in the public zeitgeist where people recognize Bitcoin as something different from all the other stuff? Is it more education? Is it more companies like yourself? What do you think gets us from here where we are today, where there's still this conflating between the two, to a complete understanding that there's Bitcoin and then there's everything else? What do you think needs to happen?
I think obviously more education is better, more books better, more podcasts better. But at this point, we have quite a lot. There's a lot of content to consume if you have the desire to do so. And I'm really excited about the game theory of nation states and individual states. And like America, for example, I heard that Florida endorsed the strategic Bitcoin reserve. We know that Wyoming has been very, you know, on the forefront of Bitcoin adoption. And I think once you get the game theory and you have people in Georgia going, oh, why aren't we thinking about what they're doing in Florida? Are they going to be better than us? And that competition between countries and companies where their rival has adopted Bitcoin, but maybe they haven't. And that drives the interest, because those of you that have, or anyone who has orange-pilled people a lot, or, you know, spent a lot of time doing this, you know that people don't get Bitcoin and they're not motivated to actually learn and get that understanding unless they want it themselves. So you have to have some sort of incentive to do that, which is, I mean, obviously number go up is a big incentive, but I think the other big incentive is competition.
100% competition for sure. You mentioned nation state adoption. That intrigues you. Let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, the United States, 5 days from now, looks like Donald Trump is going to be the second president in history to get a second non-consecutive term. Anything could happen. We've seen, you know, in 2020, there's a great deal of things that can happen between now and Election Day that could change the likely outcome based on polling and obviously betting markets. By all accounts, it looks like we're going to adopt in the United States a strategic Bitcoin reserve, or at the very least, a very accommodative Bitcoin policy. Paired with that, other nation states who are trying to skirt around sanctions and create a basket of currencies of their own, which they wanted to back with gold, have recently come out and said that gold would not work for the underlying asset to back this basket of currencies, right? Russia, China, India, what they're trying to do with BRICS. And so it seems to me that Bitcoin is the only option for them. Couple that with the fact that we're now saying in the United States, we're going to pursue a formal Bitcoin treasury strategy over the next several years. How do you think all this game theory plays out? And do you think that these massive developed first world nations start actively allocating to Bitcoin?
I think they do. I think these massive nations and the small ones, I think everyone does, because it's what you have to do. I like to think about that that Andreas Antonopoulos quote, or I think he was giving a talk where he said, Bitcoin is gunpowder technology, or it's like the adoption of gunpowder, and you really don't have a choice in that everyone else is just going to be better than you if you're still fighting with your sword or bow and arrow. And gold, I think it's interesting that they've publicly, I haven't heard that, but I think it's interesting that they publicly stated that gold wouldn't work. I think we know now why gold doesn't work, because it's physical. It's a physical risk. You have to keep it in a warehouse. You have to verify that the gold is actually gold. You have to melt it down, test the purity. You want to move it from this vault to another vault across the continent. That's going to take time. That's going to cost a lot of money. That's going to carry a lot of risk as well. If you want to move Bitcoin from one side of the continent to the other, there is very little risk involved other than putting in the wrong address or maybe setting the fee too low. So it's an order of magnitude. Bitcoin is an order of magnitude better way to store value than gold, the same way that, you know, an iPhone 16 Pro is an order of magnitude better than the Nokia phones that we had in the early 2000s and late 90s.
100%. Yeah, the Nokia. Obviously, you and I, you know, we're young enough to probably not have used those or not have used them for a very long time. I know my first phone was the Droid 2, which still had a physical keyboard, and those are a thing of the past. And so, yeah, I do think that this recognition of Bitcoin as the best debasement hedge and being geopolitically neutral as well, obviously that is the big thing that these other countries who are facing sanctions from the US that they care about. It's better at being gold than gold is. And it seems to me that this informational arbitrage that, you know, hey, hop on the Bitcoin train, it's literally 10 times, it's 10 times smaller than gold. It's actually 11 or 12 times smaller than gold's current market cap. There's still an insane amount of upside to capture what gold has. And then beyond gold too, usurping the US Treasury market and things like that. Fascinating prospect, fascinating things to consider there. I want to shift gears to early riders. This is an extremely cool firm that I would like to discuss a little bit more. So earlyriders.com, first thing it says on your website, is a venture firm built on sound capital. Tell me a little bit about the story of Early Riders, how this came to be, and then we'll talk a little bit about what you guys do.
Sure. So the founders of OnRamp, Jesse Myers and Michael Tanguma, they started OnRamp early last year with, you know, the whole thesis that we sort of discussed earlier around multi-institution custody and hardware devices and, you know, trying to scale Bitcoin to, you know, this massive asset. And they, when creating the company, didn't go and raise a bunch of outside capital. They were really clipping their own Bitcoin to fund operations through it. And from their experience in that, they realized that this is the way to build companies, and they should have some sort of venture arm of OnRamp where you supply Bitcoin to companies and they use that and slowly clip it. They're very prudent with capital and they're able to, you know, last longer. They don't have to raise as much. And then they realized, and I believe that was late last year, that was a super big idea and it should be a completely separate firm, because the more that they realize that the traditional venture game is broken, really, it was just too big to be an individual component within OnRamp. So they launched the fund earlier this year in 2024, and I got involved just basically immediately because I was already following them and I was looking to go into Bitcoin professionally and just was really obsessed with the idea of building companies on foundations of sound capital. Because over the last 10 years, 20 years really, you know, interest rates have been very low, money has been free, and your money is also on fire. So when your money is on fire, you're incentivized to allocate the capital as quickly as possible. You have a hammer and everything needs to look like a nail. You're just constantly running around with this hammer trying to, you know, invest in companies. You really don't care if 99% of them don't work out. You just need that one. And there is just a lot of bloat, a lot of waste, a lot of just misused talent. I mean, it's really unfortunate. But we sort of flip that idea on its head. And at Early Riders, we raise, deploy, and return to LPs in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is our hurdle rate. Bitcoin is, you know, the entire denomination of the fund. So we're fundamentally knowing that instead of making a potential investment, we can just hold spot Bitcoin in our pocket. And I'll pause there.
That is incredible. So a lot to unpack there. That's a revolutionary concept because, like you mentioned, money has been free. That's also led to, and you know this, a huge amount of misallocated capital, venture firms investing in companies that, you know, produced a very minimal return, if not a negative real return, just because rates have been so low. Now that we're in an environment where we have marginally positive real interest rates, we've seen a lot of those companies completely just die, completely die. And so it, you know, the notion of raising capital and funding companies using Bitcoin, it seems to me like it is a much sounder way of investing in companies, but it's also going to it's going to drive companies to be worthwhile and actually net value producers instead of just this interest rate arbitrage as a function of rates being so low. Your product doesn't have to provide much real value whatsoever. It seems like companies invested in when Bitcoin is your hurdle rate are going to be a lot more worthwhile, provide a lot of value, and destroy a lot of that capital misallocation that's been enabled by zero interest rate policy.
Right, we're almost value investors because we're not just investing in Bitcoin companies. So far, the portfolio is Bitcoin companies, but there is one that we're diligencing now that has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It's just a healthy company. The founders are Bitcoiners. They came to us because they only want to raise once. They want to focus on building. And a lot of times founders have to spend more time raising money. You raise the seed and then the A and then the B and then the C. You're constantly on a roadshow instead of actually getting in deep and getting into the weeds of the product, which is what we want to enable across the portfolio.
I love it. I love it. That sounds absolutely revolutionary. And so how far along are you in Early Riders? You know, what kind of companies are you looking at? You don't have to disclose, but how far along are you guys and where do you see your firm in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, as Bitcoin's monetization accelerates, as we reach targets like 150 and then, you know, $250,000 over the next 5 years, ostensibly, where do you see your firm and do you see more, you know, similar models to what you have, VC built on sound capital? Do you see similar companies to yours cropping up in the future?
We've made a lot of progress this year. This year, Early Riders was launched. We raised and closed the first round of our fund, have began making investments, both build investments and venture investments, which I think I should clarify. We have two forms of investment at Early Riders. We've got builds and ventures. Builds is where we take our own talent. We go in and really want to operate the business and de-risk it and make sure that, you know, it's an important business to us. So Acropolis is an example of that. We really think that Bitcoin-only treasury management is an absolute need in the space, and the companies need it, like we discussed earlier. So that's why we have it in the build bucket. And the venture is just more typical, hey, take this Bitcoin and run with it sort of investments. So we've got our initial build investments. We've got our initial venture investments. We just announced our lead investment actually in Flash yesterday, which is a Bitcoin payments gateway company. So we've made a lot of progress. We're beginning to raise the second round right now. And I think in 5 years, if everything goes right, it could be one of the most successful venture funds there is, knowing that it's entirely denominated in Bitcoin. I think it will be copied because in the end, people who allocate to venture do want to see returns. I mean, they're not like venture is risky, but they aren't keen with the idea of just throwing their money away. And with, you know, rates going up, there's a lot of incentive to invest in companies that have foundations of Bitcoin, because I think those companies are more successful to produce returns for LPs. And once you get this incentive, and like, I think a lot more in the future, especially 5 years from now, people are going to ask, why don't I just hold spot Bitcoin? So if you're addressing that question head on, and you're still, you know, going out a bit on the risk curve and being able to invest in companies and hopefully create more value than what an LP put in, then I think that's a good proposition.
A very good proposition indeed. You know, it sounds like this is the future of the venture capital landscape. It sounds like what your approach is going to influence the broader venture capital landscape. I think firms are going to see your success and consider a similar approach, particularly as Bitcoin monetizes and does extremely well, and consider this approach, if not investing with Bitcoin, having Bitcoin as their hurdle rate. That is fantastic. The final question I have for you, you could take this wherever you want, but it's very broad and it's very specific to you, is what advice would you give to other investment firms or businesses that are on the fence about adopting Bitcoin in their treasury or as part of their business model?
Sounds cliche, but get off zero, because when you get off zero, you're incentivized to continue to learn, to continue to understand deeply why Bitcoin is beneficial for your personal balance sheet or your business balance sheet. If you don't have skin in the game, it's really hard to be motivated. And like I said before, you have to get to that point where you get off zero first. But I think once you get off zero, and you know, every Bitcoiner will tell you this, the snowball starts to really roll downhill and you start to go deep down the rabbit hole and you learn and you learn and you learn. And ultimately, it's I think Bitcoin is great financially. I think it's great mentally. You start to, you know, Bitcoiners are very common, healthy people. They're people who are have great relationships with their family because they have low time preference ideals. And that, like I said, that applies to both your personal life and your business life. If you can get your business to start adopting Bitcoin and all your employees really understand it, and instead of wasting money on, you know, something that it's not going to add value or it's frivolous, maybe they'll say, hey, let's not do that because we could just hold spot Bitcoin. And that would be better for all of us in the long run. So I think get off zero is the number one piece of advice I would say. And whether you like books or podcasts or YouTube videos or anything, just go find what you like and dive deep into it. And if it's Bitcoin only, you're probably going to find some high signal information. Just stay away from those shit coins.
Stay away from those shit coins. Stay Bitcoin only. I would recommend the exact same. Thankfully, on my journey, I never had a shit coin phase. Praise be to God for that. But Mason Carter, thank you so much for coming on the show. Principal at Early Riders, co-founder of Acropolis. Before we sign off, where can people find more of your work, and where can people learn more about both your companies?
I'm on X, Twitter at Onchain Cowboy. Super easy to remember. I'm the Bitcoiner from Texas, so that's where that name came from. I'm on LinkedIn, Mason Carter. You can find everything about our portfolio companies. I believe the X for Early Riders is early_riders, just Early Riders on LinkedIn. So you'll find all of the portfolio companies there. And then Acropolis is Acropolis BTC on X and Twitter, and then just Acropolis on LinkedIn. So if you have any questions or need anything, I believe my messages are open. You can message me, you can email me, you can get in contact, whoever you'd like. Happy to help on any front.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Mason. And for the viewers and listeners, all of that will be linked in the show notes, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Fountain, Wavelength, or YouTube. Find those in the show notes below. Mason, thanks again for coming on. And thank you to the listeners for listening to yet another episode of the Theia Podcast. Make sure to check out Theia at theia.us, spelled T-H-E-Y-A, now available on the App Store and our web app at app.theia.us. Mason, thanks again. I'll talk to you later, man.
Mm-hmm.